If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
The hearing on the Committee of Oversight and Government Reform will come to order. Want to welcome everyone here today. Without objection, the chair may declare a recess at any time. I now recognize myself for the purpose of delivering an opening statement. Good morning and welcome to today's full committee hearing on sanctuary cities with the mayors of four American cities, Boston, New York, Chicago, and Denver. Over the past 4 years, the Biden administration created the worst border crisis in American history. The Democrats said that President Biden did not have the power or the money to stop the flow of illegal aliens at the southwest border. Turns out, the only thing President Biden did not have was the willpower. In a few short weeks, President Trump has proved what we all know to be true. The Biden administration could have stopped a crisis at any moment if only they had the courage to enforce the law. Since President Trump assumed office, illegal entries at the southwest border have plummeted. A 94% drop in 1 month. 94%. Under President Trump, the world knows that there are consequences for unlawful entry into the United States. The border crisis was not the result of climate change, a lack of resources, or a failure to grant amnesty. It was the result of the last administration's deliberate choice. President Biden enacted policy starting on the day he assumed office to allow millions of unvetted illegal aliens to pour into the United States. Many of these illegal aliens have long rap sheets that include violent crimes. President Trump has an electoral mandate from the American people to deliver on his promises to secure the border and enforce the immigration laws of the United States. And he is delivering on this promise big time. The mayors here today each lead so-called sanctuary cities. And let's be clear, these policies only create sanctuary for criminals. Sanctuary policies violate federal immigration law by protecting criminal aliens at the expense of the American people. Sanctuary cities and states refuse to cooperate with federal immigration enforcement efforts and harbor illegal aliens. They often actively work to stand in the way of President Trump's mission to protect the American people and restore integrity to the American immigration system and the rule of law. Sanctuary cities forbid their officials, including those in law enforcement and public safety roles, from sharing information about illegal aliens in their cities with the federal government or turning over criminals in their custody to ICE. As a result, sanctuary cities release criminal illegal aliens back onto the streets where they often go on to commit more crimes. In Chicago, for example, an illegal alien who was recently arrested for killing a 63-year-old man had previously been arrested in Chicago for trying to lure a child. ICE lodged a detainer against the criminal alien, but Chicago authorities released him back onto the street because of the city's reckless sanctuary policy. And now an innocent man is dead because of Chicago's refusal to follow the law. These reckless sanctuary policies also force federal immigration officers to go into local communities to apprehend criminal illegal aliens. If sanctuary cities were to simply communicate and work with federal immigration authorities, then federal agents could arrest criminal illegal aliens in a secure environment like a state or local jail. Instead, they have to risk their own safety and public safety by having to go into uncertain, dangerous circumstances just to make arrests. Sanctuary cities make us all less safe and are a public safety nightmare. That is why I launched an investigation into sanctuary cities and why these mayors are here today. We cannot let pro-criminal alien policies and obstructionist sanctuary cities continue to endanger American communities and the safety of federal immigration enforcement officers. Today, Mayors Wu, Johnson, Johnston, and Adams will be publicly accountable for their failure to follow the law and protect the American people. President Trump and his administration are taking action against sanctuary cities, and Congress must follow not by allowing a single penny of federal funding to go to cities and states that prioritize criminal aliens over the American people. I now yield to Ranking Member Conley for his opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Every member here today, Democrats and Republicans alike, agrees that violent criminals don't belong in our communities. We all want our cities to be safe and have zero tolerance for violent crime, irrespective of the status of the perpetrator. Where we disagree is that my Republican colleagues prefer a selective application of the law to shield the President of the United States from accountability and this administration from the rule of law itself. In America, we uphold the rule of law, independent from partisan politics, without fear or favor. Betraying those convictions, President Trump's Department of Justice has tried to force the conditional dismissal of very serious charges against one of our witnesses here today. In exchange for that witness's total and complete submission to the radical immigration agenda being propounded by the administration. And the DOJ has done so over the objections of a Republican acting U.S. attorney whom President Trump appointed. Rather than enabling a flagrant, corrupt, and quid pro quo, seven federal prosecutors, seven, including Republicans, resigned. One of them, a former clerk to Chief Justice John Roberts of the Supreme Court, said that anyone in his position, quote, would know that our laws and traditions do not allow using the prosecutorial power to influence other citizens, much less elected officials, in this way. History is calling on us now to stand up for those laws and traditions. Doing so also demands an affirmation of state and local sovereignty in determining the most effective ways to keep residents safe in compliance with federal law. To deny this sovereignty is an assault on the independence of every American city across the country. Today, Republicans have hauled before us the mayors of four major American cities to frame them as lawless because those cities have some limits on how intrusively and aggressively their own officials can conduct federal immigration operations and responsibilities. Let's be clear. The state and local laws that Republicans have issue with today are in full compliance with federal law. They do not obstruct ICE from carrying out its duties, and they are backed by evidence demonstrating that they keep people safe and safer in counties with laws that do not honor extrajudicial civil detainers and had significantly lower levels of violent crime than counties that had them. Mayors, police chiefs, sheriffs, and local leaders have made clear that the way to combat violent crime is allowing local police to do their local job of ensuring public safety in their own communities as they account for it, commandeering them to spend limited time and resources as federal agents is a non-starter and can contribute to crime and non-cooperation in immigrant communities throughout the country. At this year's Conservative Political Action Conference, Border Czar Tom Homan said he is, quote, bringing hell to the city of Boston until it complies with his demands. I don't know what that means. Boston is my hometown, and I'm glad to welcome our mayor, Mayor Wu, and her one-month-old baby here today. But I don't know that Boston welcomes Mr. Homan or anyone else bringing hell to the city. The Republican crusade against local independence doesn't just undermine public safety in our communities. It is blatantly cruel, and I say inhumane and un-American. Kenya Colindres, her husband Wilson Rogelio Velasquez Cruz, and their three children came to the United States in 2022 seeking asylum, a legal category of immigration, after escaping violence in Honduras. Wilson was granted a five-year work permit, allowing him to work at a tire shop and to provide for his family here in the United States. Kenya said that her husband had never been in trouble and was, quote, a man of God. On January 26, the family of five was in church when Wilson was lured out by an ICE agent waiting to arrest him. Despite having valid work permits, the Trump administration refused to hear his appeal and is actively deporting him. Wilson was the sole breadwinner for his family. Now Kenya has to worry about how she's going to pay the bills and take care of her three children, on top of the fears that she and her children might be next. Last week in El Monte, California, Sitle, a woman who was battling bone cancer, tearfully watched as her mother, Yolanda, cried inconsolably as she was detained by ICE agents who refused to even present the detention order. Yolanda was Sitley's sole caretaker in her struggle against cancer and has no criminal record. And now Sitley is on her own. ICE is also conducting massive raids in cities and towns that have led to the wrongful detention of U.S. citizens, including Native Americans and military veterans. One school district sent a letter to parents warning that ICE may board school buses and demand documents from children. Children are going to be afraid to go to school. One reportedly wrote a goodbye note to friends saying, quote, "If ICE takes me, don't forget about me. If ICE takes me, don't forget about me," from a child. Is that the country we want? America needs immigration policies that keep everyone safe and make the country stronger and allow us to grow and fill in the skill sets we don't have. If President Trump was serious about delivering those solutions, he would not be attacking the Constitution's guarantee of citizenship to children born in the United States. To see our country through this period of darkness, we need leaders who will stand up for the rule of law and will champion public safety at the local level and American families, whether they're immigrant families or native-born families, deserve due process, deserve respect, and deserve that Statue of Liberty that welcomes all comers. I yield back.
Ranking Member yields back. I request unanimous consent that Representatives LaHood of Illinois, LaLota of New York, Crank of Colorado, Malatakis of New York, Hurd of Colorado, Evans of Colorado, Van Dyne of Texas, Ocasio-Cortez of New York, Gillen of New York, and Davis of Illinois be waived onto today's hearing for the purpose of asking questions. Without objection, so ordered. And now, before we introduce the witnesses, I recognize Mr. Higgins from Louisiana for 20 seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I thank the ranking member as well. Just to briefly, respectfully recognize the presence of the family of Wesley Haynes, a constituent. I'll speak to his case in my time, Mr. Chairman, but his parents, Patrick and Kathy, his wife, Olivia, his little brother, Brady, are present today, and they have a hard exit soon. Their four-month-old daughter, Anne Marie, is waiting at home for Olivia to care for. And I just respectfully acknowledge their presence, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Ranking Member. We will discuss the details of their case. They tragically lost Wesley Haynes last year. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to recognize this beautiful American family.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. I'm very pleased today to welcome our outstanding witness panel, the mayors of four major American cities. First, we have Mayor Eric Adams, who's a outstanding mayor of New York City. He was sworn into office on January 1st, 2022. We have Mayor Mike Johnson, who's the mayor of the city and county of Denver. He was sworn into office on July 17th, 2023. I now recognize Representative Krista Morte from Illinois for 1 minute to introduce our next witness.
Mr. Chair, I'm pleased to introduce Brandon Johnson, mayor of the greatest city in the world, namely Chicago, a city that was built by generations of immigrants, people like my parents and myself. Mayor Johnson was raised in Elgin, Illinois, which I'm proud to represent in Congress. The mayor was one of 10 children born to Andrew and Wilma Jean Johnson. His parents inspired him to become a teacher in the Chicago Public Schools and then later to run for office. Mayor Johnson won his first race for Cook County Commissioner in 2018 and later became mayor of Chicago in 2023. Mayor Johnson has dedicated his life to public service, and I'm pleased to welcome my fellow Illinoisan to the United States House of Representatives and to the Oversight Committee. Welcome, Mayor.
I now recognize Representative Presley from Massachusetts for 1 minute to introduce our next witness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm proud to introduce Mayor Michelle Wu, a dedicated leader committed to making Boston a welcoming home for everyone, and the first woman and person of color to be elected mayor of the city of Boston. For over a decade, I've had the privilege of working alongside Mayor Wu and witnessing her dedication to public service firsthand. She leads with compassion. She is innovative and inclusive. Under her leadership, Boston has become the safest major city in America, a city that is welcoming to families from all walks of life. Just weeks ago, she welcomed her newest family member, baby Mira, who is with us today, a beautiful reminder of the future she's working to build. Madam Mayor, I am grateful for your partnership, friendship, and leadership. Thank you for being here.
Gentlelady yields back. And finally, we're also joined by Mr. David Beer, who is the Director of Immigration Studies at the Cato Institute. Mr. Beer is the minority witness here today. I want to thank you all again for joining us, and I look forward to our discussion this afternoon. Pursuant to Committee Rule 9G, the witnesses will please stand and raise their right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Let the record show that the witnesses answered in the affirmative. Thank you all. You may take a seat. We, again, appreciate you being here today and look forward to your testimony. Now, let me remind the witnesses that we have read your written statement, and they will appear in full in the hearing record. Please limit your oral statement to 5 minutes, and we're going to limit our questions to 5 minutes, and that's going to be enforced today, and that's for both sides, both sides. As a reminder, please press the button on the microphone in front of you so that it is on and the members can hear you. When you begin to speak, the light in front of you will turn green. After 4 minutes, the light will turn yellow. When the red light comes on, your 5 minutes have expired, and we would ask that you please wrap up. I now recognize Mayor Adams for his opening statement.
Good morning, Chairman Okoma, Ranking Member Connolly, and members of the committee. As mayor of New York City and a former police officer for 22 years, keeping New Yorkers safe is my top priority, and it has been our administration's North Star. When I entered this role, my job was to help our city recover from the negative effects of COVID, most importantly, to bring down crime. As a result, overall crime was down across New York City last year, and we have now had 3 straight months of double-digit declines in major crimes. I'm here today to testify on how New York City can continue to reduce crime, even as a sanctuary city. To be clear, a sanctuary city classification does not mean our city will ever be a safe haven for violent criminals. It also does not give New York City the authority to violate federal immigration laws. To the contrary, New York City will always comply with city, state, and federal laws as it does now. Law-abiding immigrants in New York have an important role. Immigrant New Yorkers, including those who are undocumented, pay billions of dollars in taxes and contribute billions more in spending power to our economy. Immigrants also play a vital role in the functioning of the city. This was on full display during the COVID-19 pandemic. The various immigrant residents of our city worked to keep the city moving while many other New Yorkers were able to shelter in place and work remotely. Hospitals, the food industry, and many other businesses were able to function because of the commitment of our immigrant population. As mayor, I do not control who enters or remains in our country, but I do have to manage the population that is within our city. In order to carry out this function without having long-term negative ramification, I must create an atmosphere that allows every law-abiding resident, documented or not, to access vital services without fear of being turned over to federal authorities. I cannot have a city where parents are afraid to send their children to school or where children are sleeping on the streets, creating the potential for child exploitation and sex trafficking. If an undocumented person refuses to seek medical care until they have a medical emergency, our city's healthcare system will be strained. And if an undocumented individual witnesses a crime but is afraid to call 911 for fear of being turned over to federal authorities, criminals will roam free. And it reminds me of my early days as a police officer. I have seen firsthand the damage that can be done when someone is too afraid to seek out the police. Early in my career, I responded to a man who was calling out for help. We caught the suspect, but when it came to filling out the police report, the individual, an undocumented man from China, said he did not want to file a report and put a target on his back with federal immigration authorities. Approximately four decades later, our country still is in desperate need of comprehensive immigration reform. And as a result, New York City was hit with the largest humanitarian crisis in our city's history over the last 3 years. Federal law did not allow me to stop buses from entering New York City. State law required me to provide all in our city with housing and meals and to educate children. City law makes it unlawful to collaborate with ICE for civil enforcement. We complied with all of these legal requirements and still managed the humanitarian crisis with the care and compassion, while at the same time bringing down crime, recovering our economy, and preventing any child from being forced to sleep on the streets. Comprehensive immigration reform is long overdue. While the solution is not within my control as a mayor, I am committed to working with federal officials to go after violent gangs and those who harm residents of our city. This is why we have over 330 NYPD officers assigned to different federal joint task forces, over 70 of which are assigned to task forces with Homeland Security Investigation, the criminal investigation arm of ICE. Those task forces focus on many different important priorities, including going after violent gangs and child exploitation. I look forward to sharing New York City collaborations that we do daily with our city, state, and federal partners to keep New York City to continue to be the safest big city in America. Thank you.
Thank you. I now recognize Denver Mayor Johnson for his opening statement.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for inviting me to testify today. This committee convened this hearing on the critical topic of immigration. I want to tell you Denver's story. When I became mayor 20 months ago, Denver was already receiving buses of immigrants with little to no notice or coordination. At one point, we were receiving 10 to 11 buses a day, dropping off as many as 300 people, mostly women and children, in 10-degree weather with only sandals and a T-shirt, leaving them in danger of freezing to death on our streets. All told, 42,000 people arrived in Denver over 18 months, the largest per capita influx of any city in America. We are each entitled to our own opinion about what should happen at the border, but that was not the question facing Denver. The question Denver faced was, what will you do with a mom and two kids dropped on the streets of our city with no warm clothes, no food, and no place to stay? As mayor, I have to protect the health and safety of everyone in our city. As a man of faith, I have a moral obligation to care for those in need. As scripture says, for I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. So that's what we did. In Denver, we believe our problems are solvable, and we are the ones to solve them. So we went to work. When we started, we had the largest encampment in Denver history, with more than 200 migrant families living in freezing temperatures. So we opened 8 different city shelters housing 5,000 people. City employees volunteered to take extra shifts, and Denver residents stepped up, making meals, donating clothes, furniture, school supplies. Some even welcomed families into their own homes. We helped 8,700 eligible individuals apply for work authorization so they could put food on their own table, pay their own rent, and reduce the strain on public resources. As a result, a year later, there is not a single migrant encampment left in the city. We have closed all of our shelters. We have connected people to jobs and housing, and the city's immigrant support budget has dropped by nearly 90%. And in the midst of this, migrants did not bring a wave of crime to Denver. In fact, crime went down. Homicides dropped 17%, shooting victims dropped 24%, auto theft down 29%. America is not just a place, it's a belief. Some people are born into it. Some fight their whole life to get to it. It's a belief that all are created equal. It's a belief that it doesn't matter where you came from if you're willing to fight hard enough. Julian Becerra's parents believed that. So they brought him to this country from Mexico when he was 10. They taught him respect, and they taught him to love and serve his community. As an adult, he decided the most honorable way to serve his community was in uniform. So he enlisted in the Air Force. Then he served as a sheriff, then finally as a police officer, where he served with distinction until one day he was pursuing a criminal on a dangerous bridge and fell to his death. In the midst of the immigration crisis, I attended the fallen officer's memorial as I watched officers hand Officer Becerra's 10-year-old daughter a folded American flag. I watched her cry as she wrapped her little arms around that flag and held it tight the way she wished she could hold her dad, but never will again. For the rest of her life, she will cherish that flag, that American flag, because it is the country that her dad loved, it is the country he chose, it is the country he served, it is the country he gave his life for. So if we want to tell the story of what impact immigrants have in America, we must tell the full story. That story must acknowledge that this country is lucky to have people like Julian Becerra, who love this country enough to risk their lives to keep us safe, to keep all of us safe. When buses started showing up filled with migrants, some in my city were afraid, just like I'm sure some of your constituents are afraid. They were afraid about crime and homelessness and worried about what these new people might take away from them. I understand that fear. And the truth is, people who are new to this country do good and bad just like all of us. But there's another truth. When those buses kept on coming, Denver made a choice as a city. Not to hate each other, but to help each other. Not to turn on each other, but to turn to each other. And see if together we could solve a problem that felt bigger than any one of us. And that's what we did. It wasn't perfect, and it required sacrifice from all of us. But in the end, Denver came out stronger and closer than we were before. Because Americans expect us to do more than point fingers. They expect us to solve problems. So if Denver can find a way to put aside our ideological differences long enough to manage a crisis we didn't choose or create, it seems only fair to ask that the body that is actually charged with solving this national problem, this Congress, can finally commit to do the same. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I now recognize Chicago Mayor Johnson.
Thank you, Chairman Comer. Thank you to the ranking member Connolly and to members of this committee. I have the great privilege and honor of serving as mayor of the city of Chicago, the third largest city in the nation. Established by a black Haitian man and a Potawatomi woman, Chicago is and always has been a proud city of immigrants. Generations of new arrivals, including the descendants of the enslaved during the Great Migration, created a vibrant city where one in five residents is foreign-born. Each day I wake up to serve every one of Chicago's 77 unique neighborhoods and those who live in our great city. As mayor of Chicago, nothing is more important to me than the safety and well-being of all residents. And since I was elected, my administration has been laser focused on creating and implementing public safety initiatives that protect all Chicagoans. We launched the People's Plan for Community Safety, which builds trust between communities and law enforcement by prioritizing transparency and violence intervention. We established a dedicated robbery task force that reduced robberies by 25% citywide. We added over 200 detectives, increasing the clearance rates on our cases. And we've updated police equipment and technology so that our police officers have the tools they need to effectively prevent and fight crime. Our efforts to improve public safety by building trust with and investing in our communities are working. Violent crime is down in Chicago. The city ended 2024 with its lowest homicide rate in 5 years. The city is also safer because of our welcoming city ordinance. That law makes sure that the city's police resources are focused on our local priorities. In fact, the 40 years of Chicago's leaders have recognized that our policies toward civil immigration matters help to prevent and solve crimes. Put simply, any actions that amplify fears of deportations make Chicago more dangerous. Those fears cause witnesses and victims to avoid cooperating with police. The cooperation of all people, regardless of their immigration status, is essential to achieving the city's goals of reducing crime and pursuing justice for victims. When there is trust between city's residents and the police, undocumented immigrants come forward to report crimes to local law enforcement and provide information that helps the police solve those crimes. And now, I know there are myths about these laws, but we must not let mischaracterizations and fear-mongering obscure the reality that Chicago's crime rates are trending down. We still have a long way to go, but sensationalizing tragedy in the name of political expediency is not governing. It's grandstanding. Every violent crime is devastating, but scapegoating entire communities is not only misleading, it is unjust and it is beneath us. So let me be clear. Chicago's welcoming city ordinance and our other laws and policies do not lead to more crime. They do not prevent cooperation with federal law enforcement on criminal matters. And we do not harbor criminals. We arrest them, often because of laws that allow residents to feel safe helping the police. As mayor, I'm building a Chicago that embodies the dream of my father had when he came from Salus, Mississippi during the second migration, a Chicago that invests in housing, healthcare, jobs, and education. And that's why we've increased safe and stable housing by adding almost 4,000 more units, expanded access to healthcare by opening 3 mental health centers, and focused on getting our young people well-paying jobs, with summer jobs increasing by 45% since I've taken office. Our local partnerships have built a solid foundation, a better, stronger, and a much safer Chicago. We need this body's support for these efforts. We are ready to partner with you on the measures we know promote trust and create sustainable public safety. And to the people of Chicago and all hardworking people across this great nation, these values are our North Star, the drinking gourd we follow to a better future. We will not live in fear. It is not our portion. We will not go back. I do look forward to answering the questions of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. I now recognize Boston Mayor Wu for her opening statement.
Thank you, Chairman Comer, Ranking Member Connolly, and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Wu. I am the daughter of immigrants, and since November of 2021, I have had the honor of serving as mayor of Boston. I'm proud to be here on behalf of our city, the police officers, first responders, city workers, the faith leaders, teachers, parents, and neighbors who partner every day to make Boston the safest major city in the nation. And I'm proud every day to work alongside the greatest police commissioner in the nation, Commissioner Michael Cox. Every year since I took office, we've set a new record low for gun violence in Boston. Last year, Boston saw the fewest homicides on record in the last 70 years. Those are the facts. And behind these record lows are historic highs. The most ever young people working paid summer jobs. The most pre-K seats at no cost to families. The most affordable housing built in a generation. We have invested in the kinds of opportunities that cultivate prosperity and eradicate crime. And the laws on our books promote the kind of community trust that keeps all of us safe. In Boston, our police department resources and taxpayer dollars go towards preventing and solving crimes. And when it comes to criminal matters, the Boston Police partner every day with state and federal law enforcement. But Massachusetts state law and the Boston Trust Act make clear that immigration is federal law enforcement's responsibility. We are the safest major city in the country, because our gun laws are the strongest in the nation, because our officers have built relationships over decades, and because all of our residents can trust that when they call 911 in the event of an emergency or to report a crime, help will come. This federal administration's approach is undermining that trust. In the past month, I've met with residents and faith leaders in community centers and places of worship, asking my constituents what they want Congress to know. And what I heard over and over again was fear and frustration. I spoke with pastors whose pews are half empty on Sundays, doctors whose patients are missing appointments, teachers whose students aren't coming to class, neighbors afraid to report crimes in their communities, and victims of violence who won't call the police. This federal administration is making hardworking, taxpaying, God-fearing residents afraid to live their lives. A city that's scared is not a city that's safe. A land ruled by fear is not the land of the free. Next month, Boston will celebrate 250 years of our nation's freedom. And in every one of those years, Boston has welcomed the world to our shores. From the English immigrants fleeing religious persecution, to the Irish forced out by famine, to the families from Haiti, the Dominican Republic, Cabo Verde, Vietnam, and so many more who call Boston home today. We are the safest major city in the nation. We are home to the greatest healthcare, the greatest colleges and universities, the most advanced innovators, and the 2024 world champion Boston Celtics. We are the cradle of democracy and the city of champions. We are all of these things, not in spite of our immigrants, but because of them. One in seven signers of the Declaration of Independence were immigrants. On the last four Red Sox rosters to win a World Series, one in five were immigrants. Of all the faculty at Boston University to have earned a Nobel Prize, all but one were immigrants. Today, one in four Boston residents were born somewhere else. Most have jobs, many have kids. All of them chose this country as their home because, like my mom and dad, they believe that here, where you've been doesn't limit where you're going. The strength of your character has nothing to do with the color of your passport. And how hard you work matters more than where you were born. That wherever you're from, if you pitch in, look out for your neighbors, and cheer for the home team, you can build a better future here for the people you love. So to every one of my neighbors back in Boston, know this. You belong here. This is your home. Boston es tu hogar. Boston, c'est la calle. This is our city. We are the safest major city in the nation because we are safe for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. And I recognize Mr. Beer for his opening statement.
Chairman Comer, Ranking Member Connolly, and distinguished members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. The Cato Institute's half century of independent research demonstrates that people of all races, religions, and birthplaces can thrive in a free society. Liberty must be protected, both from over-intrusive government and from private violence. Unfortunately, the president's chaotic, indiscriminate deportation plan does the opposite. It harms public safety, threatens Americans' rights, and undermines the successful integration of America's immigrants into its society and economy. The president's first action was to rescind the requirement that ICE target public safety threats first. He has ordered that millions of vetted immigrants be stripped of lawful status and deported. He is even attempting to deport the U.S.-born children of people without permanent status. This flagrantly unconstitutional act effectively orders a series of crimes, wrongful arrest and imprisonment, civil rights violations, and unlawful deprivation of voting rights. Never before in American history has a president sought the power to strip potentially tens of millions of Americans of their constitutional rights. The president is also explicitly asserting the authority to ignore any law passed by you, Congress, that provides due process for people accused of being in the country illegally. The administration has repeatedly misled you and the public about who it is targeting, stating it would focus on public safety threats, that only the worst of the worst would be sent to Guantanamo Bay, and that every person it had arrested had a criminal record. We now know that most ICE arrests since the inauguration have been of people without a criminal record. Indeed, he is arresting people who entered legally, never violated any law, and sending them to Guantanamo Bay prison. It is no surprise in this lawless environment that many people and many cities simply do not trust the federal government on immigration. That is a problem. But under our Constitution, states determine their policies. Congress cannot force them. It must reestablish trust. Unfortunately, some members of Congress want to force an indiscriminate policy of mass deportation on the entire country with no public safety focus. If Congress wants more cooperation, it should address the concerns of these cities. That what Congress should do is reestablish trust. Indiscriminate mass deportation agenda is a far greater threat to public safety than any city policy. A mountain of empirical research shows that reasonable restrictions on ICE cooperation do not increase crime rates, and that immigrants lower crime rates. Immigrants, including illegal immigrants, commit crimes serious enough for them to be incarcerated at half the rate of U.S.-born Americans. Data from Texas shows that illegal immigrants are 36% less likely to commit and be convicted of murder. At least before this current mass deportation effort, immigrants were more likely to report crimes than U.S.-born Americans. Don't jeopardize that. Mass deportation is diverting law enforcement resources away from obtaining justice for victims. Indeed, it even targets the victims. Sabotaging local economies and obliterating communities will not restore public safety. It will make us poorer while increasing the crime rate and victimization rate for Americans. There is a better approach. We don't need chaos and disorder of illegal immigration or of mass deportation. Why don't people come legally? Because Congress has provided so few options for them to do so, not updating its laws in the last 3.5 decades. Just 3% of those applying for permanent legal status in 2024 received it. That's the failed policy. Let peaceful immigrants pay to get vetted, work, and contribute legally. And let law enforcement at all levels focus on keeping Americans safe. Thank you.
All right, our witnesses have concluded their opening statements. We're going to begin with questions from members. And I want to remind the members, we have 60 members today that are going to ask questions. So I'm going to strictly enforce the 5 minutes. I'll hit the gavel if anyone's still talking, and we'll allow the witnesses to answer the question. But let's please be mindful. We have a lot of questioners today for this very important hearing. And again, we thank the witnesses. I'll recognize myself to begin questions for 5 minutes, and I have limited time, so I want to start with a simple yes or no question, and I'm going to hold you all to that because after the first question, then we'll allow for a little more time. But Mayor Johnston, in 2017, Denver prohibited city officials, including corrections officers, from assisting and cooperating with any investigation, detention, or arrest procedures related to federal immigration laws. The city also stated that federal immigration authorities shall not be granted access or allowed to use the secure areas of any city or county jail. So Mayor Johnston, is Denver a sanctuary city?
A lot of folks use that term.
Yes or no?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Folks use that term differently. I can tell you what Denver does. We do
okay,
not.
Okay, I take that as a yes. Mayor Johnston, on March 10th, 2023, you posted on X that Chicago must lead and live by the promise to be a sanctuary city. Is Chicago a sanctuary city?
A 40-year policy of being a welcoming city.
Yes.
A 40-year policy of a welcoming city.
Mayor Wu, in November 2024, you gave an interview noting that you served on the city council a decade ago when the Boston Trust Act was first passed. You said in that interview that in terms of Boston's policy, there is a prohibition on resources and personnel going to enforce civil immigration detainers, meaning Boston police and other departments cannot cooperate with ICE when it comes to detaining on civil warrants. Mayor, is Boston a sanctuary city?
Boston is a safe city.
I take that as a yes. And Mayor Adams, on November 12, 2024, you said, quote, "This is a sanctuary city," but I must comment that you have, of the witnesses today of the major cities, you have publicly stated that you were willing to work with ICE on detaining the most criminal illegals, and I want to publicly thank you for that. But my question to you, sir, is New York City a sanctuary city?
Okay, so now classification.
Based on our classification, yes.
Okay. Last year, in a Boston suburb, an illegal alien raped and impregnated his 14-year-old daughter while living in a shelter for illegal aliens. Mayor Wu, under Boston law, would you turn this criminal over to ICE on a detainer?
Whenever there's a criminal warrant, Boston police enforce that and hold people accountable.
So would you turn that criminal over to ICE?
This happened outside the city of Boston, but I can tell you in the city, whenever someone commits a crime, whenever there's a criminal warrant, we hold them accountable. If ICE deems that they are dangerous enough to hold, obtain a criminal warrant, and the Boston police will enforce it.
Will you turn that criminal over to ICE?
We follow the laws,
In Chicago, an illegal alien who is a suspected member of a violent foreign gang who was brought into custody for his potential involvement in a murder. He was released when Cook County declined to press charges. This illegal alien is also facing charges for kidnapping and sexually assaulting his former girlfriend last year. Now he's on the streets. Mayor Johnson, under Chicago law, would you turn this criminal over to ICE on a detainer?
Our local law enforcement works hard every day to get criminals off the streets of Chicago.
Would you turn that criminal over to ICE? That's the problem. That's one of the topics of this conversation. That's one of the problems we've heard from Tom Homan and from the Homeland Security, is that in your cities, when someone's apprehended for a crime and ICE is now with this new federal policy wanting to come in and deport the criminal alien, that you will not cooperate with ICE. Will you turn that criminal over to ICE?
And we do not harbor criminals. Our local police department works hard every single day to ensure that the city of Chicago is
safe. Yes or no? Will you turn the criminal over to ICE?
With a criminal warrant from the federal government, our local law enforcement repeatedly collaborates with federal agents.
So you're saying publicly today you will turn that alien over to ICE in a safe place like a jail and not turn him out on the street and say, here you go, ICE, good luck. You will turn that criminal over to ICE.
With a criminal warrant, as we have done for 40
years.
Should
that criminal be turned over to ICE?
With a criminal warrant, they are subject to the federal laws, and that includes deportation.
My time has expired, but again, the point that we've got to iron out today is that we have to have cooperation. It is federal law to turn over those illegal criminals to ICE. And we have heard reports, and many of you have said publicly, that you are going to obstruct that. That is against the law. And we're going to hear more about that today. Now I recognize the ranking member, Conley, for his 5 minutes.
Thank you. Mayor Wu, I quoted Tom Homan, the so-called border czar, saying that he wanted to bring hell. He was bringing hell to the city of Boston. What did you understand him to mean by that?
Let's talk about Tom Homan. Shame on him for lying about my city, for having the nerve to insult our police commissioner who has overseen the safest Boston's been in anyone's lifetime. Bring him here under oath and let's ask him some questions. I am here to make sure that the city of Boston is safe. Others may want to bring hell. We are here to bring peace to cities everywhere.
Mayor Johnston of Denver, what would your reaction be if Tom Homan wants to bring hell to your city, Denver?
We think that we have folks in Denver who are working hard, playing by the rules, paying taxes. There is no one that is seeking hell to come to Denver. What people are looking for is opportunity and hope.
And for the record, he can do whatever he wants to do, I guess. But the fact of the matter is, you absorbed on a per capita basis the largest immigration a year or two ago. And you indicated that your crime rate actually fell. It didn't increase. Is that correct?
That is correct. Crime is down in Denver. We have homicides down 17%. Violent shootings are down 24%.
And in Boston, I'm sorry, I've got limited time. Mayor Wu, same thing in Boston. The Boston crime rate has been falling, correct?
we had 24 homicides last year, 24 too many, but that represented a tremendous reduction, one of the biggest drops anywhere in the country.
Thank you. So the correlation between immigration and crime is false, as you point out, Mr. Beer. Perhaps you can elaborate that. I find it ironic that you characterized correctly, in my view, President Trump and Tom Homan's approach to immigration as lawless when they're invoking law and order and crime as the rationale for their lawlessness. Could you expand on the lawlessness and the irony of the fact that, as you point out in your testimony, the crime rate among immigrants is half that of the native population?
That's right. I have a table in my written testimony that you can look at. Top 20 cities for immigration court filings over the last 4 years. 19 of those cities saw a decline in their homicide rate. If you look at all of the major cities, there is a negative correlation between increasing numbers of immigrants and the homicide rate. So that means more immigrants, lower homicide rates. That holds true across the United States. So I think the correlation that's trying to be made is more immigrants, more illegal immigrants, more chaos, more crime. That does not hold. What we do see under this administration is an increasing willingness to ignore the laws. He has, as I mentioned, signed an executive order that says he can ignore due process rights for people who are accused of being in the country illegally. This is an incredibly dangerous assertion of authority and should be investigated by Congress.
And is it a reasonable proposition for our local leader? I know I was chairman of my county, which is like being mayor of a large county. And, you know, we focused on local law enforcement. You know, we tried to help the feds when we could. We were cooperative where we could be. But our job was local law enforcement. And there is a clash when ICE behaves this way, and I described some horrible incidents. It instills fear in the immigrant community, and it fosters non-cooperation rather than cooperation, which is the mandate of each of these leaders, is it not?
Absolutely. We want cooperation. Many of these cities are the reason why immigrants are more likely to cooperate and report crimes to the police than the U.S.-born population is. So there are good reasons to limit this mass deportation of people in their communities.
I would just argue that the premise of this hearing is false. We have local law enforcement cooperating with the local political leadership, and it's working. It's bringing down crime rates. And the proposition that immigrants cause crime is false. In fact, patently false, as your testimony, I think, would demonstrate, Mr. Beer. And the idea that these are sanctuary cities that need to be punished is simply a war on urban America. And I'm proud of the mayors who are in front of us here today, and I thank them for their testimony, and I thank them for their service to their local communities. I relate to it, and I think it's a noble calling. I yield back.
Gentleman yields back. Chair recognized Ms. Boebert from Colorado.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mayor Mike Johnston, I hope we can start off on a level field of agreement here. So in your testimony, you said that locals were asking Denver, what will you do when they saw 10 to 11 buses coming in a day and 42,000 illegal aliens entering their city? Denver, what will you do? And in a Fox 31 interview in January, you blamed state law for not allowing the city of Denver to coordinate with ICE, resulting in Denver being a sanctuary city, saying, quote, the whole state is bound by our state law in this, which is pretty consistent in some of these practices, like everywhere in the state. We don't honor ICE detainers, end quote. I've demanded Governor Jared Polis and the Colorado State Legislature to repeal them. Douglas County has led on a lawsuit to get those laws repealed. So, Mr. Mayor, would you join me today in calling and demanding that these sanctuary policies, these Colorado state laws, be repealed?
Thank you, Congresswoman.
Yes or no, Mr. Mayor? Will you join me?
I do not believe the detainer law needs to be changed. So I can tell you what Denver
Don't want them to coordinate with ICE, but yet you're blaming the state of Colorado for those policies. It's a statewide law. It's not a Denver law. And you're blaming the state of Colorado for the law, yet you will not call for that law to be repealed. Correct? Yes or no?
We do coordinate with ICE presently. I'm happy to tell you what we do on that. So we've honored detainer requests more than 1,226 times over the last
What about
years.
Before? What about before a warrant? There are many issues before a warrant.
So if what happens is if ICE has a sends us a detainer request, what
well, you have local law enforcement officers, Mr. Mayor, who are unable to coordinate with ICE to even get the initial warrant. They aren't allowed to tell them that they are illegal aliens. So unfortunately, you won't join me in asking for this law, demanding that this law be repealed. So let's keep going. In 2017, Denver passed an ordinance that ensured any city employee who spoke with federal immigration authorities would be fired, among other policies that have led to local and national media outlets to call Denver a sanctuary city. So now let me ask you, would a city employee be fired for communicating with anyone from the EPA?
Right now, Congresswoman, our policy is we don't ask people's status.
Would any city employee be fired for communicating, coordinating, talking with an agent from the EPA, a federal employee?
Not to my knowledge, Congresswoman.
What about Health and Human Services? Would they get fired for talking with someone from Health and Human Services?
Not to my knowledge, Congresswoman.
So they would only be fired for talking to federal law enforcement officers?
No, that's incorrect, Congresswoman.
This is an ordinance.
City employees do,
Denver in fact, passed in 2017, Mr. Mayor.
Our city employees do, in fact, communicate with ICE. We do coordinate on multiple things with ICE. For instance, if there is a violent criminal warrant in the city, we pursue that together.
No, we're talking before the warrants, Mr. Mayor. There are issues happening before warrants are issued, and local law enforcement officers are unable to coordinate because there is no warrant. And your ordinance says that a city employee would be fired for communicating with federal law enforcement. So you've been mayor for 600 days. Have you ever called for that ordinance to be repealed?
We are not unable to coordinate with ICE right now. We're in communication with ICE right now.
Only if there is a warrant, but I'm talking prior to the warrant.
We wouldn't have a reason to coordinate.
Because you don't know if they're illegal, because you are unable to coordinate until there is a warrant. So that's why this ordinance needs to be repealed. So now the 600 days, there's been no time to ask for this to be repealed. You did have a newcomer's playbook, 25 pages. You had time to put that together. And you had time to agree with the city council to authorize up to $2 million to pay Joe Biden's former lawyer, his law firm, to help cover your ass for Denver's sanctuary city policies for this hearing, correct?
Thank you, Congresswoman. We have counsel.
Did you authorize that spending?
We have counsel to support this committee's investigation into any documents you may have. That is a year-long contract for the 13,000 city employees.
And your budget
you may request
is
documents from.
Seriously declining. Denver Magazine reported that Denver has spent $7.5 million on shipping illegal aliens to other destinations. Mayor Adams, yes. Did Mayor Johnston ever coordinate with you and tell you that he was shipping illegal aliens to your city?
We coordinated in communication around the entire asylum seeker issue in our cities.
So I've heard that Denver crime went down. Well, Aurora's crime went up because you were also shipping them to Aurora. And we have documentation that I don't have time to discuss here in this hearing that proves you were shipping illegal aliens to Aurora. Their crime was increasing while you were hiding under laws that you will not demand be repealed. Ordinance from your city. And then crime was going up from Trinidad Aragua gangs vandalizing apartment owners. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I hope that we can get this.
We have a 5-minute rule, Mr. Chairman.
Chair. Gentle ladies, time's expired. Chair recognizes Ms. Norton from Washington, D.C.
There have been a lot of talk today about these cities and their, in my view, principal decision not to respond to extrajudicial ICE detainers. But I would like to back up and talk about these detainers, what these detainers really are. Requests from ICE to unconstitutionally hold someone without due process or probable cause. Enforcing ICE detainers is also expensive, often results in mistakenly holding U.S. citizens and undermines public safety. It diverts resources from protecting the local community to carry out the federal government's job of immigrant enforcement. Mayor Johnston, what challenges do ICE detainers represent to your law enforcement and city resources?
Thank you, Congresswoman. I think that was to me, right?
Sometimes that's correct.
Confused. Okay. Thank you, Congresswoman. I think it's important. I appreciate it, to describe what Denver currently does in terms of what coordination looks like and what it doesn't, which is, if we get a detainer request, if we have someone in our custody that ICE would like to get access to, what we do is we provide them a notification of release. And so if that person will be released from our custody, we notify them of the time and the date when they will be released. So ICE, if they choose to, could pick that person up. We have done that 1,226 times over the last 7 years. And that has enabled ICE, when they choose to be able to bring someone into custody. What we do not do is hold someone beyond their release date, because there are multiple courts who have found that to be unconstitutional. If someone is serving a sentence and that sentence expires this Friday, we can't hold them another 7 days without an additional charge. And so that is what state law does, and sheriffs around the state would say it is a strain on local resources to hold them for a civil issue that is not linked to a criminal charge that we have in our city or another jurisdiction. That's why we don't honor those types of detainers.
Mayor Johnson, how about for Chicago?
So thank you for that question. And for Chicago, again, our top priority with the Welcoming City Ordinance is to ensure maximum safety, the type of coordination that happens between our local law enforcement and our communities is paramount to building trust and keeping our communities safe. The ordinance, as well as the state law, the Illinois Trust Act, which was passed with bipartisan support and signed by the Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, we do not permit our local law enforcement from engaging in any federal matters with a criminal warrant. Our city and our state will cooperate with the federal government, but without a criminal warrant, our local law enforcement focuses in on local issues to keep the people of Chicago safe.
Mayor Wu, how would fulfilling ICE detainers detract from public safety in your city?
Thank you, Congresswoman, for hosting us, first of all, in your district. We hear every day from Boston residents, a city that is 28% people who were born in another country, that the trust and feeling that they know they can call 911 when they need help, or if they have information to solve a crime and police need that help, that they feel comfortable in doing so. And so our policy in Boston is that regardless of your background or immigration status, you have access to our libraries, we want you to take your kids to school, we want to be part of our community. And also, regardless of immigration status, if you commit a crime, if you do harm in the community, you will be held accountable.
It is critical to the safety of Americans that cities have the ability to decide what is in the best interest of their people. Mayors and local enforcement know their cities best. I would yield any time remaining to the ranking member.
I just want to underscore what the gentlelady has said. Local government knows best how local enforcement, law enforcement works. And cooperating with ICE is part of that. But they can't be a substitute for ICE doing its own job, which is a federal responsibility. Thank you for yielding.
Before I recognize Ms. Jordan, I believe Ms. Boebert has a unanimous consent.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask unanimous consent to submit to the record multiple local news articles referencing Denver's sanctuary policies, including the newcomers playbook written by Mayor Adams and the budget, which shows millions and millions of dollars of the Denver City budget cut.
Without objection, so ordered. Chair now recognizes Mr. Jordan from Ohio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mayor Johnston, who's Abraham Gonzalez?
Thank you, Congressman. He is a individual that was released from the county jail on Friday in the city and county of Denver.
That's all you know about him?
I do know that he was facing charges that the
Venezuelan gang member arrested by Border Patrol on September 20th, 2023, released into the country by the Biden administration. A few months later, he's arrested in your city, charged with aggravated assault. On March 11th, 2024, he's charged with motor vehicle theft, stole a car. And then on March 20th, 2024, Mr. Gonzalez is charged with felony menacing. 6 days after that last charge, I send you a detainer, which includes an administrative warrant. Basically, it says if you're going to release this bad guy, this gang member who allegedly stole a car, menaced people, and assaulted people, give us a 48-hour heads up. Is that right? That refresh your memory?
I do know about the detainer request. I do know that we provided a notification of release.
What kind of notice did you give ICE when you released him?
We gave him notification. I'm not sure how long
in
advance
hour.
It was. I do know that there was
1 hour notice, and you released him 5 days ago, right? Why not give him more heads up? Let's put the slide up. Let's see what it says here. Let's put the slide up. This is what the Denver Sheriff's Department, it's kind of hard to see, so I'll read it. It says, Denver Sheriff Department, ICE notification being released to the streets. I simply said, we want just release him to us. You release him to the streets. Why not release him to ICE?
Thank you. What we've done, and we do this regularly, we've done 1,226 of these, is we notify
ICE. I'm asking about one. I'm not asking about the 1,200. I'm asking about Mr. Abraham Gonzalez, who's a gang member from Venezuela, stole a car, assaulted someone. You had him in your custody for how long?
I know that we released
345 days you had him in custody. And I said, hey, can you give us 48 hours heads up?
I don't know.
You gave him 1 hour notice.
Mr. Congressman, we notified them of release. There were 6 ICE agents present when he was released, so they had enough time to respond and to be present.
Respond where?
To the jail where we released him from. So we released him to, we notified them of the release time. When we notified them of release, they come to the jail facility to pick them up.
That's not what you said. You said you released him to the streets. Did you release him to the streets? You released him to ICE.
What we do, sir, is we release him from our county jail and we coordinate with ICE on that release time and release date so that ICE can come and pick them up from that location.
Pick them up where? In the parking lot?
Yes, sir. They're on the facility.
Guess what happened in the parking lot?
I know, sir. I've reviewed the video. So I looked at it. I've talked to the sheriff last night.
ICE officers got assaulted, didn't he?
I've reviewed the video,
sir.
They had
to tase the guy, didn't they?
Would you like me to answer, sir?
No, I'd like you to answer. Did they tase him?
I know that there were 6 officers that had multiple tasers. I saw the detention
on
video.
So they had 6 officers? If you keep him in the facility and they come in the facility and get him, does it take 6 officers? Probably takes 2, doesn't it?
So we've been doing these, as I mentioned, 1,224 times, 1,226 times. This is the first time I've been made aware of there's been an incident like this. So I reached out to ICE after I saw the video. I've coordinated with their team and offered to sit down and see if there are procedures we can change.
It's a simple question.
Make sure this works smoothly.
It's a simple question. You can release him in the parking lot, give ICE 1 hour notice, and they got to send 6 officers to arrest this guy. Or you can say, hey, what? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to hold him. You come in and bring 2 officers in, and you turn him over there. Why not do it that way?
We have a city ordinance.
You know why you don't do it that way?
We have a city ordinance that governs...
Because you're a sanctuary city. This is the whole point.
No, sir, I disagree with you.
Okay.
Because I'll tell you why. If you talk about sanctuary as a definition of shielding people from law enforcement, we do not do that. What we do is provide services. In this context, what we did is we coordinated the release.
An officer got assaulted because of your policy, which says we're going to release him to, in your words, not mine, to the streets. They have to arrest him in the parking lot. They bring 6 officers... when they could have had 1 or 2 just come in your facility, in the jail, and take the guy there. But you won't do it that way.
I've seen the video. I've reached out to ICE. I've offered to sit down and coordinate on strategies. If we need to make adjustments to what we do on releases, we'll do that. This is the first time in the 1,226 releases I've heard an incident.
I read your written testimony last night. Four and a half pages. And you used the words safe, safer, or safety 13 times. Talking about my job is to protect the safety of the people in Denver. We prioritizing making sure everyone in our community is safe. That's a lie. Because it was not safer for the ICE agents who are part of your community. No way was it safer. The safest thing to do is to say, ICE, we got him in custody. Come here, we're releasing. We held him 345 days. We can't hold him a second longer. We can't wait for you to come inside the building. We got to let him go, so you have to arrest him in the parking lot. That is how stupid sanctuary policies are and what they mean to the community that you put at risk and to the ICE officers, officer who was assaulted. And they had to use a taser on the... It's not good...
Mr. Chairman,
5 minutes is up.
Consent request.
Gentlemen, time's expired. Chair recognizes Mr. Lynch from Massachusetts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Ranking Member Connolly. I want to thank the panelists for your willingness to come before the committee and help us with our work. You know, I truly believe that if we had a rational and comprehensive immigration policy in this country, if we competently regulated the flow of immigration, if we knew the purpose and circumstances of each immigrant's arrival here, and if every immigrant knew what was expected of them when they arrived, I honestly and truly believe that immigration could be the greatest blessing for our country. Look at our world rivals, China and Russia. No one is trying to sneak into China, sneak into Russia. It's because of what we offer here as a nation. There is a substantive issue that's at play here. And I want to address that. So under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4 of the Constitution, it provides Congress, and I'll read the section here, to establish a uniform rule of naturalization. And Clause 18 further provides that Congress has the power to make all laws that shall be necessary and proper to execute its enumerated powers, including immigration. So it appears that Congress has taken up that responsibility in the Immigration and Nationality Act, which they exercise under constitutional writ. On the other hand, we have local so-called sanctuary city laws that at times, so those sanctuary cities laws tend to address local cooperation with federal authorities in your jurisdictions, within your cities. And sometimes it does appear that the sanctuary city laws are defending against the congressional grant of authority to operate in that area. Now, you all, as mayors, and I ask this of the entire panel, you deal with this every single day, and we've heard some of it in your testimony, eloquently. How do we, as lawmakers, we're struggling with this right now. There's a tension between that authority of Congress to act under Article 1 of the Constitution and then your responsibility, nobly taken, to provide a safe environment for the residents and visitors to your cities. How do we reconcile, and I'm asking you for advice. You have a great perspective on this. How do we together reconcile the tension between those two operating systems, grants of power? And I'd welcome any advice you have on that, because that's what we are struggling with up here in terms of trying to come up with a comprehensive immigration policy that addresses all of these concerns. Mayor Johnson?
Congressman, I'm happy to start the response. We obviously believe there is a federal system that has federal obligations and state and local obligations. We think, as Mayor Wu said, that our officers are uniquely prepared, trained, and ready to enforce local law and to keep our city safe. We want to focus on that. We do not have the capacity for our law enforcement to be doing federal immigration enforcement, but we want to be partners in making sure we're pulling violent criminals off the street. We do that now. We've done it in the past. We'll keep doing it. But we think the capacity for the federal government to focus on.
But what I'm trying to point at is this. So the current president of the United States, Donald Trump, rode into office on this issue. On this issue. He put people in fear. I'm in a state that's 2,400 miles from the border. We're going to spend $1.5 billion on providing services and housing and everything to people who are in our state unlawfully. He got into office on that issue. So the costs to democracy are massive. It is now threatening our democracy because we have mishandled this issue. So we need to get together on this and turn immigration, like I say, into the greatest blessing that this country has and not something that people are afraid of. That's the challenge.
I agree.
Congressman?
Please.
This may be the last may be the last blue dress I'm wearing this month. It's going to be green from here on out as we celebrate Irish American heritage back at home. Please pass comprehensive immigration law that is consistent and compassionate, that will make our jobs possible, and we would so appreciate that partnership.
I hear you. Thank you. I yield back.
Gentleman yields back. Chair recognizes.
Chair, I have a unanimous consent request.
I didn't. I'm sorry.
I have a unanimous consent request.
All right. Proceed.
I'd like to seek unanimous consent to enter into the record thousands of DHS agents shift to deportation instead of drugs, weapons, and human trafficking. That is February 2025, USA Today.
Without objection, so ordered.
Parents pull kids from childcare as immigration fears hit U.S. youngest.
Without objection, so ordered.
Finally, an 11-year-old girl in Texas died by suicide after she was bullied about her family's immigration status, her mother says.
Without objection, to order. Chair recognizes Dr. Gosar from Arizona.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mayor Wu, I'll be showing up at your house tomorrow with my bags at 5 o'clock. Leave your doors unlocked, please. What are you making for dinner? Because I expect a warm meal and a balanced diet. Now, I'm going to need a car, and please leave me some cash because I'm going to need to go to my doctor's appointment on Friday. That would be to Mr. Mayor Johnson. Now, I don't want to sleep on the couch, so put me up at a luxury hotel. You're the Mayor Johnson. Obviously, you wouldn't like this because you don't know me, right? You know nothing about me. You might not like that. Sanctuary cities offer this kind of hope, this false hope, to illegal aliens by saying that very thing. Stay with me. We don't tell anybody that you break our laws. Now, thank you. You've made the United States complicit and one of the largest purveyors of human trafficking in the world. Thank you. You're disgracing the legal immigration system that came here, and the immigrants that came here the right way, through Ellis Island at the time, now through our going through our process. And I want to talk about that process because I've always been told, and it's never been really challenged, is that good process builds good policy, builds good politics. I think that works really, really good because you can always fall back to the process. And if the process isn't good, you always get a good process. Now, you heard the word establishing trust, okay? How can you establish trust at the very beginning when you have a false narrative here? You're defending folks who have broken the law. The definition I've always looked at is trust is a series of promises kept. What kind of trust are you supporting here? What is the trust of an illegal alien? It's a false hope. It's a false trust. Welcome. We're bringing you in. It's disorganized process. Now, let me ask you a question. Mayor Adams, did you support SB 1070?
I'm sorry?
Did you support the Arizona law called SB 1070?
I'm not familiar with it, sir.
Well, let me explain, okay?
Mm-hmm.
SB 1070 challenged the federal government on its supremacy clause because we in Arizona wanted, the government wasn't doing anything, so we thought, we'll do this. We can't allow them to break laws. The Supreme Court ruled that struck it down. Now, it seems contraindicating here that you would have supported SB 1070, right, Mary Adams? Based on the premise that would you violate the supremacy clause in regards to immigration?
Would I violate
the supremacy clause?
This is way over my head.
Okay.
I failed law.
Mayor Johnson, would you have supported SB 1070, allowing Arizona to follow their own laws? Because that's what you're doing right here.
Thank you, Congressman. We currently follow all federal law, all state law, and all local law. So we do not have any supremacy clause challenges that we're pursuing or maintaining.
Okay. Well, it seems like you are. But, Mr. Johnson, do you agree?
The city of Chicago complies with all laws.
Okay. Mayor Wu.
I'm not familiar with that law because I'm focused on the city of Boston, but we follow all state, city, and federal laws in Boston.
What happens when you get in conflict with them? Who do you support?
The Constitution, as I understand it, doesn't require cities or police officers or anyone to follow their laws in conflict, follow federal laws in conflict with local laws or state laws.
Okay, in the Constitution it says, and it's explicit, that the federal government has jurisdiction and supremacy over all immigration laws, right? I mean, I heard it a number of times from my colleagues over here. We're the ones who can define that. We're the ones that have it. We just heard we want a comprehensive immigration policy. How can you get a comprehensive immigration policy when you're defying it from the very get-go? You're building it on false premises and false tenets.
Respectfully, Congressman, you could pass bipartisan legislation, and that would be comprehensive immigration law. The false narrative is that immigrants in general are criminals, or immigrants in general cause all sorts of danger and harm. That is actually what is undermining safety in our communities. If you wanted to make us safe, pass gun reforms. Stop cutting Medicaid. Stop cutting cancer research. Stop cutting funds for veterans. That is what will make our city safe.
Yes, thank you. I yield back.
Chair recognizes Mr. Chris Morte from Illinois.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mayor Johnson, there's been much talk about Chicago and its enforcement of laws to rid our communities of criminals, so I want to give you a chance to address some of these questions. First, Mayor Johnson, the city of Chicago operates under four sets of laws: federal, state, county, and, of course, Chicago's own laws, right?
That is correct.
And most of these laws are not within Chicago's sole power to change. For example, the Illinois Trust Act, a state law, was enacted in 2017 by then-Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and dictates interactions between ICE and law enforcement, right?
That is correct.
And under Chicago's own law, I have a copy of it right here, Chicago is required to help ICE whenever ICE presents a judicial criminal warrant for an arrest, correct?
Yes.
In fact, Chicago has assisted ICE with criminal warrants in the past, right?
Yes.
So just to clear it up, any time that ICE does the work and goes to a court to get a criminal warrant to arrest somebody, the city of Chicago not only is required to, but does cooperate to remove that criminal from our community, right?
That is correct.
Let me turn to another topic. President Trump has said many things about Chicago, including that it is, I have this NBC News report, worse than Afghanistan. Mayor, I'd suggest the facts suggest otherwise. For example, Condé Nast recently named Chicago the best big city in America 8 years in a row.
A friendly amendment, best freaking city in the world, city of Chicago.
Chicago's the largest rail hub in America.
That is correct.
Chicago is a quantum technology hub in this country.
$20 billion new investment.
Chicago area is the home to the second most number of Fortune 500 headquarters of any city in America, right?
Just voted again the top relocator for corporate headquarters for 13 consecutive years.
And it's home to O'Hare Airport, the most interconnected airport on the continent. Is that right?
That is correct.
That doesn't sound like Afghanistan to me, sir, does it?
The city of Chicago is a beautiful place. We also have 20% of the world's fresh water right in our front yard. Our restaurants are amazing. In fact, everything that is dope about America comes from Chicago.
A Republican named Lincoln was nominated for president in Chicago, and a Democrat named Obama called Chicago home, too. It's the city of big shoulders, the heart of the heartland, the home to the world's best pizza. And we're not going to take any slander from Donald Trump or anyone else lying down. Is that right?
That is correct.
Sir, I want to turn your attention to another topic. Mayor Johnson, you'd agree with me that high grocery prices are among the top concerns for the people of Chicago, right?
The economic conditions that are unfortunately that are not being addressed by Washington has caused a great deal of trepidation and anxiety.
Mayor Wu, according to USDA, the wholesale cost of a dozen eggs has gone from $6.59 since January 19th when Donald Trump took office to $8.39, a 27% increase, and this has got to anger Bostonians, right?
People are doing their very best, trying their hardest, working multiple jobs, and they need support.
Mayor Johnston, I suppose that people in Denver are concerned as well, right?
I'm very concerned. This is the most important issue for us, is how we make sure that it's affordable to live in the city.
Mayor Adams, the same is true for New Yorkers?
Affordability is an issue that's impacting our city, and that's why we're doing the best we can to put $30 billion back in the pockets of working-class people.
President Trump, if you're watching this hearing, I respectfully ask, when will egg costs be high enough for you to issue one executive order on bird flu? $10 a carton, $15 a carton. It'll soon be cheaper to buy a magazine for an AK-47 than to buy breakfast. This is flat out wrong. Turn to my last topic. Interestingly, last night in a record long address, the president did not mention the word Medicaid once, which is top of mind for everyone. Mayor Johnson, you don't dispute that 1.6 million people in Cook County are enrolled in Medicaid, right?
I do not dispute that. In fact, in most of our safety net hospitals, 70% of the individuals that are being serviced are being serviced through Medicaid.
I recently received outreach from Lurie Children's, a preeminent children's hospital located in Chicago. They said, quote, slashing Medicaid will put access to care for all children in our state at risk. You would agree that's unacceptable, right?
That is unacceptable.
It doesn't matter where you're from. If you're white, black, brown, poor, or rich, massive cuts to Medicaid will devastate our health care system. Thank you, and I yield back.
Gentleman yields back. Chair now recognizes Mr. Perry from Pennsylvania.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mayors, thanks for being here, leaving your cities to come to Washington, D.C. today. By either definition or by claim, each of you, I think, could justifiably say represent what's considered a sanctuary city. If you could describe it, what would you – sanctuary from what? Anybody? Mayor Johnson, you want to start? Mayor Johnston?
Thank you, yeah. Congressman. I welcome that because I wanted to clarify. We do not shield people from federal
– I just asked you what – so you don't consider yourself a sanctuary city?
We provide services and supports.
Do you consider yourself a sanctuary city? That's just
we do not under that definition.
You don't use the definition. So you're not a sanctuary.
We call ourselves a welcoming city.
So what are you welcoming, and who are you not welcoming?
Well, we're welcoming everybody.
Okay.
We don't keep folks.
So you're welcoming criminals that you don't have any idea what their crime background is, and that's you're good with that.
No, we aggressively pursue.
How do you do that? How do you vet the people that you welcome in your sanctuary city?
Sir, we don't vet folks that arrive from Illinois or California with a background check when they come into the Denver airport any more than someone from another
location. So you're welcoming any illegal immigrant or illegal alien to your city without question?
Well, folks that make the decision to come to Denver, they arrive, and then we expect
them to get a job. But you call them. You welcome them. You welcome them. You call them to your city and say, if you come here, you will be safe from what?
Thank you, sir. We don't call anyone to our city. Folks that arrive in our city, we offer the same access to services they may need to be successful. And if they break the law, we hold them accountable. We charge them. We prosecute them.
What about if they've already broken the law?
Well, if they've already broken the law and there is another jurisdiction that has a warrant for that person, they let us know and we would cooperate to transfer them to that jurisdiction.
I think we saw in Mr. Jordan's conversation with you that you really don't do that. Mayor Johnson, how about you? How many, according to my records, you have welcomed 51,648 illegal aliens to your sanctuary city. So I'd ask you, sanctuary from what?
If you're referring to the number of individuals that were bused from Governor Abbott without any coordination, the 52,000 individuals that were seeking asylum, those individuals were bused to us. I passed a bus ordinance to work to coordinate with the governor of Texas. He refused to do that. But that transfer of individuals was the result of the governor of Texas, not the result of a welcoming city ordinance.
Welcoming city ordinance. So you're not welcoming these people that came here illegally?
The individuals that were bused to us were bused to us from the border.
They were not welcome in Chicago? You didn't welcome them? You didn't provide them sanctuary?
So the welcoming city ordinance is pretty straightforward. It allows for our local law enforcement to focus on local policies, and that's why we're seeing a decline in violence.
So you don't care about federal law enforcement policies, only local policies.
We comply with all laws. What I do care about is this body, Washington, passing comprehensive immigration reform.
So let me ask you this. Chicago residents reported 28,443 violent crimes during 2024 alone, cases of aggravated assault rising to the highest level in two decades. Now, also, state funds, $160 million, were issued to illegal alien job assistance shelters in Chicago. You're the mayor of Chicago. Do you think that your residents or the residents of your state should be paying for that more than they should be paying for their own needs, their own roads, their own public safety? I mean, who elected you? The people that came illegally, whether they were sent to you or not, or the people that reside in Chicago? Who elected you? And who do you serve?
The people of Chicago elected me as the 57th mayor of the city of Chicago, and we serve all the residents of the city of Chicago.
Illegal or not, criminal or not, how many of the 662,566 illegal aliens with criminal histories that ICE has reported are now residing in Chicago?
Someone will have to get back with you with that number.
Do you take immigration information from criminals as they're arrested and processed? Do you take immigration information?
Our local law enforcement focuses on getting all violent individuals off the streets of Chicago.
Do you determine whether they're here legally, what their immigration status is, as a function of criminal, of your justice system?
The time's expired, but please feel free to answer the question, Mayor.
The Welcome in City Ordinance ensures that our local residents communicate and trust local law enforcement to ensure that criminals and crime is being addressed,
so
and that's why
violent
crime has
gone down in the city of Chicago.
Thank you very much,
Chair. Now,
Mr. Chairman, I have a unanimous consent request. Mr. Chairman, I have a unanimous consent request.
I'm sorry, Ms. Presley.
I have a unanimous consent request.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I'd like to seek unanimous consent to enter into the record. Mass deportations would deliver a catastrophic blow to the U.S. economy.
What,
this is
what
from the Joint Economic Committee, December 2024.
From where? What publication?
The Joint Economic Committee, December 2024.
Without objection, so ordered.
I'd like to seek unanimous consent to enter into the record from the American Immigration Council, October 2024, mass deportation, devastating cost to America, its budget, and economy.
Without objection, so ordered. Chair recognizes Mr. Khanna from California.
Mr. Chair.
Wait, I'm sorry. Mayor Wu needs a short break to attend to her young child. Mayor.
Mr. Chairman, I got the note that the baby's okay for now, so I'll continue. But thank you. I will. I believe for my husband that the baby's okay. The arrangement, if it's okay, was that everyone would take a break so I wouldn't have to go into a back room by myself to nurse when it's time.
Chair Recognizer Shikata.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I find the Republican position in this hearing quite ironic, because the Republicans are the party that are always touting local government, state government, local control, and not having federal overreach. So I want to explore actually one of your favorite topics on the other side of the aisle, the infamous mask mandates. I know how much you love them. When CDC came out with the mask mandate order of January 29, 2021, they said that we needed to have fines of $1,500 for anyone who didn't wear a mask on a plane or in a public space. And they said that there needed to be referred criminally to the Transportation Authority if they violated it more than once. Now, Governor Abbott said in Executive Order 38, we're not going to have our cities enforce the mask mandate. And Governor DeSantis said the same thing. We're not going to have our local police enforce the mandate. I want to ask Mayor Adams and Mayor Wu, because you had slightly different views on the mask mandate, but Mayor Adams You were actually praised in New York for saying we are going to take away some of these mask mandates earlier so businesses can open and there can be a revival in New York. Did you ever in law enforcement, to your knowledge, enforce the CDC mask mandate and ask your law enforcement to fine people who didn't wear a mask $1,500?
What we did was looked at the science and looked at how it will impact business, and after issuing warnings and education.
But I think it's fair to say, Mayor, right, you never referred anyone to the Transportation Department for prosecution, and you never had local police out there saying we're going to fine people $1,500 with the CDC mandate.
The goal was to always ensure that people would carry out the procedure, and we did several education and warning in the process.
Mayor Wu, you were a great advocate of masks and looked at the science. Do you know if your city government actually ever used police resources to carry out the CDC or Transportation Department's mask mandate where they were fining $1,500 or referring for criminal prosecution?
I am not aware of any incidents of someone in Boston having been fined or prosecuted for any mask-related issues. We certainly prioritize public health and saving lives, and so our role as a city was to provide positive communication, outreach, make sure there were signs and different community organizations that could go and remind people to stay safe and do their best to take care of each other and their families.
As much of an advocate as you were for masks, and I was an advocate for masks, would you have been hesitant to order your law enforcement, your local police, to say if someone was violating those mask mandates that we need to cooperate and turn them over to the Transportation Department for prosecution? Would that have given you some pause if the federal government were saying, use your police departments to fine people $1,500 and give us their records for criminal prosecution?
Yes, it would have.
And so I guess I'm trying to understand, you know, if we set this precedent that we want cities to be enforcing every federal mandate, then what happens when there's a new Democratic president that comes and says, we want a mask mandate that the Republicans may not want? And when there are conservatives like Governor DeSantis or Governor Abbott saying we don't want our cities to enforce that. Do you see, Mayor Wu, any difference between a federal government asking you to enforce laws that ICE is doing versus a federal government asking you to enforce a mask mandate or, frankly, to enforce gun laws that may not be what your local city department is focused on?
It does seem that local authority is part of our democracy and part of our system of government.
Isn't the real issue here not one of immigration, but of federalism? Isn't the question, I mean, everyone agrees that there needs to be, if there's someone who's convicted of a crime, that ICE has the right to enforce those laws. The question is just, are you going to have local governments in this country be beholden to every new president's directives and arm for enforcing that? My view is that we ought to have local governments be able to use their police officers for their priorities. That, in its essence, is federalism, and it actually used to be the conservative Republican position.
Gentlemen's time's expired. Chair recognizes Dr. Fox from North Carolina.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mayor Johnson, in the last 4 years, how much has Chicago spent on care for illegal aliens?
Thank you for that question, Congresswoman. So since 2022, since the governor of Texas began shipping...
Just tell me a number. I don't need a speech. Just tell me a number.
So since 2022, since the governor of Texas was shipping individuals to cities across this country, the city's budget... roughly 1% of the city's budget over the course of 4 years.
Mayor Johnston, the same question, and I don't need a speech, just a number.
Thank you, Dr. Congresswoman. Thank you, Congresswoman. It's $79 million over the last 2.5 years.
Mayor Adams, same question. How much has New York spent to care for illegal aliens?
Approximately
approximately $6.9 billion went out of our taxpayers' funds.
Mayor Wu, same question. How much has Boston spent to care for illegal aliens in the last 4 years?
We do not ask about immigration status and giving city services and providing that access, so we do not have a number.
Taxpayers have been bearing the brunt of the massive wave of illegal aliens who've entered the United States. The Biden administration seemingly declared taxpayers and hardworking Americans collateral damage in the pursuit of open borders. Again, Mayor Johnson, are NGOs providing services to illegal aliens in Chicago?
In accordance with the Welcoming City Ordinance, our sister agencies or city departments, we do not seek the status of any individual that is seeking service.
Mayor Johnston, are NGOs providing services to illegal aliens in Denver?
Thank you, ma'am. When folks arrive on the streets without food or resources or shelter, we do provide food or shelter regardless of where folks arrive from.
Mayor Adams, same question.
Yes, in combination of city agencies and nonprofits, we responded to the migrant asylum seekers humanitarian crisis that hit our city.
And Mayor Wu, I assume you don't know their status, but do you know if there are NGOs are providing services to people arriving in your city without any kind of documentation?
There are community organizations, many of them in Boston, who seek to serve all of our Boston residents.
Congress must provide oversight and ensure accountability for taxpayer funds going to NGOs. Agents from Customs and Border Protection have been outspoken in opposition to allowing NGOs to assist illegal aliens in subversion of law and order. When asked if NGOs are working at cross purposes to the mission of Border Patrol agents, the chief of the National Border Patrol Council said, quote, most definitely, and they should not be allowed, but our government allows it, end quote. NGOs receiving taxpayer funding through grants pay for everything from food, shelter, and transportation to legal services that help the migrants traverse Mexico. That is why I introduced H.R. 245, the Grant Integrity and Border Security Act. This bill would require all NGOs who apply for a federal grant to certify as part of their application that they have not, will not, and are not engaging in acts that violate federal immigration law. If NGOs continue violating our immigration laws, then my bill would ensure that no federal funds can ever go to the violators. It's time to pass this bill, ensure accountability, and secure our cities and the border. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I yield back.
Gentlelady yields back. Chair recognizes Ms. Brown from Ohio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today we've heard my colleagues on the other side of the aisle demean and dehumanize immigrants, choosing fear-mongering and political theater over real solutions. So let's take a moment to set the record straight. The best chance for comprehensive immigration reform came in 2013 when a bipartisan Senate majority passed a bill strengthening border security and providing a path to citizenship for longtime residents. But House Republicans killed it. Fast forward a decade later to last year, the Senate crafted another bipartisan deal, one that would have enhanced border security and tackled the fentanyl crisis with better technology and more agents. But Donald Trump torpedoed it, preferring anti-immigration rhetoric to real solutions. So this isn't about fixing the problem. It's about exploiting it. And let's not forget, the president wasn't complaining about this when he was employing undocumented immigrants at his resort. We all remember President Trump's tired old tactics from his first term, the harmful Muslim ban, referring to black and brown countries as quote unquote shithole countries, and the cruel images of kids in cages. This time around is no different. President Trump signed multiple executive orders before even attempting to work with Congress. Mind you, a Republican-controlled Congress. So this isn't about policy. It's about fear. For the last decade, Trump has pushed menacing messages portraying all immigrants as criminals. But it isn't just coming from Trump. It's being amplified by right-wing media. A recent Ipsos poll found that people who watch Fox News, are twice as likely to believe myths about immigration, including the false idea that immigrants commit more crimes than native-born Americans. This is objectively false, yet 2 in 3 Fox viewers believe it is true. This serves a purpose, fueling outrage, distracting from real solutions, and keeping the conversation stuck in a cycle of fear instead of facts. And Trump's latest immigration crackdown reinforces these misperceptions. ICE raids, choreographed for cameras, deportation sweeps with photo ops, wardrobe changes, and tough talk. The cruel performative videos of immigrants in shackles, $200 million in taxpayer money to air pro-Trump propaganda ads, talk about waste, fraud, and abuse. All spectacle, no substance, all performance, no plan. On the campaign trail, J.D. Vance and Donald Trump promoted vile and xenophobic lies about Haitian immigrants in my state of Ohio. And now the Trump administration has moved to strip protections from 500,000 Haitians. These are people who have lived, worked, and contributed to this country for years. And they came here the right way, the legal way. But instead of recognizing their contributions, we are forcing them back to a country plagued by violence, instability, and humanitarian crisis. All so Trump can claim 500,000 more deportations. The cruelty isn't just the point. It's their pleasure. So let's be honest about what's really going on here. Mayor Johnson of Chicago, what sort of an impact will the Trump administration's decision to allow arrests at sensitive locations like hospitals, preschools, churches, and courts have on your city?
Thank you for that question. As a welcoming city space, it's important that the trust between the community and law enforcement is strong. That's ultimately how we have built a safer city. Just this year alone, violent crime is down 20%. Any type of threat to the civility and to the humanity of people is a threat to the evolution of our democracy. And so it's incumbent upon Washington to ensure that we are funding our education system, that we are funding our transportation system, our healthcare system, creating more jobs. Just since I've been in office, we've increased youth employment, summer jobs by over 40%. Making sure that our young people see their purpose is the value of this democracy. And so I call on this body to continue to invest in the city of Chicago that sends billions of dollars to Washington.
Thank you. Fear and cruelty are not the solution. It's distinctly un-American and a dangerous distraction from the Congress's responsibility to actually deliver progress on this challenging facing our country. And with that, I yield back.
Gentlelady yields back. Chair recognizes Mr. Grofman from Wisconsin.
Yeah, just a couple comments first. As far as the idea of who's committing crimes, we have no idea how many illegal immigrants in this country are committing crimes because nobody keeps track. Okay, if I go to a prison or a jail in Wisconsin with, I don't know, 1,500 inmates, and I ask how many of these people are here illegally or how many are citizens of another country, nobody will know the answer to that question. So that's why we don't have hard facts on how many crimes people committed. The other thing I like to point out is every year in this country about 850,000 new people from other countries are sworn in as American citizens. I don't know of Donald Trump ever talking about reducing that number. Maybe he should reduce that number, but I've never heard him talk about reducing that number. Our concern here was illegal immigration, and I would hope the vast majority of Americans think we ought to have a immigration law that the 850,000 new citizens every year go through. But if we're going to have an immigration law, it means we have to do something with the people who try to become permanent residents without going through the proper structure. Now, I think part of our problem here is we have a lot of people who don't understand why we have an immigration law at all. And I want to ask all four of you as I go down we go down the row here. Do you believe the United States should have an immigration law, or do you believe that just anybody should be able to show up and come in. And we'll start with Mayor Adams there.
I strongly believe we need to have an immigration law. I strongly believe we need to secure our borders. We witnessed a 90% decrease, and we're seeing that play out in our city. So we should have a strong immigration law.
But, and I'll ask this question then. If you believe we should have an immigration law, and then we'll get all four of you here. If you believe that, do you believe people who ignore the law, whatever that law is, should be allowed in the country?
I think that all of us must be held accountable to the law, and if we secure our borders to make sure before they come in that is done correctly, it is not going to impact cities to carry that burden. Like I said, close to $7 billion in tax dollars.
Mr. Johnson, do you believe we ought to have an immigration law in this country, or do you believe everybody should just be able to walk in here and set up shop?
Thank you, sir. I do believe we should have an immigration law. I do believe we should have secure borders. I do believe we should fix our asylum process. I do believe we should let dreamers get access to permanent citizenship.
Okay, then the question is, if somebody ignores that law and comes in this country, do you believe the whoever, ICE or Border Patrol or anybody, should spin them around and send them out, or can they just ignore the law and because they, however, cross the Rio Grande, overstating a visa, whatever, are here? Do you believe that we ought to do something to the people who are ignoring the law?
Thank you, sir. In the case of the folks we're seeing, they are coming here because they are claiming asylum. When they claim asylum, they then have a right to a day in court to see if that asylum
right.
claim is
the
valid.
The question is, though, if I come in this country and stay here and I have not gone through any formal process to become a citizen or to be a visa, legal visa, or whatever, should we kick that person out?
The folks that we're serving, sir, are trying very hard to navigate that legal process. It's often a 7-year wait for a court date when they arrive to this country, so part of it is
okay.
The backlogged administrative need at the border.
Every month, under President Biden, at least the statistics I have, 30 to 40,000 people, what are called gotaways, came across the southern border, didn't ask for asylum, didn't ask for anything. Do you believe that people who just come across that way should be escorted out of the country, or do you believe just because they ran between the designated checkpoints that they, as the result, get to stay here forever?
Again, sir, we're serving folks who are seeking asylum or have status,
well, of course,
like temporary protective status.
You wouldn't even know that.
Or CBP-1.
Okay, next, Mayor, Mayor Johnson, buddy from Chicago. What do you think? Should we have an immigration law in this country, or should anybody who comes here just be able to stay here?
I do support the bipartisan legislation that was passed out of the Senate for comprehensive immigration reform.
No, that's not answering the question. Right now, people are breaking the law. Do you believe the United States should have an immigration law? As far as I know, every country in the world has an immigration law. Maybe there's one outlier or something. And we have laws in the United States. Do you believe if people come here and break the law, that they should be escorted out, or do you believe they just get to stay here forever?
Our immigration system is broken. We have not had comprehensive immigration reform since 1986.
May I answer fully?
Yeah, his time's expired, but
okay.
Feel free to answer. Do you want Mayor Wu to answer your question, or are you finished? Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Congressman. Yes, I do believe we need cities everywhere, clearly need an immigration law that has secure borders, comprehensive and consistent, compassionate pathways to residency and citizenship, resources to adjudicate the complexities of the law. And at the same time, I do not support mass deportation. That would be devastating for our economy. And there are millions of people who are running our small businesses, going to our schools.
Okay.
Thank you. Chair recognizes, and I must add, I don't think anyone's calling for mass deportation, but Chair recognizes Mr. Garcia.
Wait, what?
From California.
Thank you. Well, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank all of our witnesses for being here today. Before I came to Congress, I was the mayor of Long Beach, California for 8 years. It's a diverse city of about 500,000 people, so I appreciate the work that mayors do. As mayor, I signed the Long Beach Values Act to protect all of our residents, including immigrants and undocumented residents. We set up justice funds to support people that were facing deportation, defending immigrants in court. These are policies that are strongly supported by my residents back home because they are good for all the community and make Long Beach safer. Now, we also know that immigrants make our communities vibrant and thriving places to live. The facts are that sanctuary jurisdictions or jurisdictions that welcome immigrants are overwhelmingly safer than non-sanctuary jurisdictions. That's actually a fact. Immigrants, both documented and undocumented, are also less likely to be incarcerated or to commit crimes than native-born people. We know this to be true. Again, these are facts. And mayors have every right to pursue the policies that you know are best for your residents. Now, the Trump administration has threatened to prosecute some of the mayors on the panel today and force them to comply with his extremist agenda. But however, Mayor Adams, you are in a different position. You, of course, are already facing serious criminal charges. And Mayor Adams, I assume that you are not going to commit perjury today. And I do believe, though, that you have an enormous amount of issues facing you ahead of you. And it means your criminal charges are absolutely relevant to us today. Bribery, wire fraud, willfully and knowingly conspiring to commit offenses against the United States. Mayor Adams, you, of course, deny these corruption charges against you. Is that correct?
Yes, Congressman.
Thank you. Now, I understand that you are proven innocent unless you are guilty, but you also have, sir, a trust problem. Four of your deputy mayors have resigned. Now, this is serious, and Republican prosecutors agree that the evidence against you is ironclad, yet Trump's DOJ moved to drop these charges. Now, I just want to be and show this. I want to be just really clear and show this here. Now, look at how the Trump-appointed acting U.S. attorney who is prosecuting you described it. Because the law does not support a dismissal, and because I am confident that Adams committed the crimes with which he is charged, I cannot agree to seek a dismissal. Now, this is a conservative Republican who resigned when Donald Trump pressured her to drop the charges. And we know the Trump administration demanded that the charges be dropped. And this is key. They will be able to refile them against you, Mr. Mayor, at any time. I think, personally, that's why you sat next to the architect of family separation on Fox and Friends. Now, Tom Homan sat next to you and said the following, and I quote, "Getting on Rikers Island is step one. We're working on some other things that we don't really want to talk about on open air because the city council will be putting roadblocks up on us. The mayor and me have a commitment to several other things." Now, this was you, of course, and Mr. Homan, the architect of family separation. This is also incredibly concerning, Mr. Mayor. You sat next to him. You smiled. You badmouthed your own city council. Now, Mr. Mayor, we have a right to know if the Trump administration has actually coerced you into agreeing to anything. And Mayor Adams, I also want to be very clear. Are you selling out New Yorkers to save yourself from prosecution?
There's no deal, no quid pro quo, and I did nothing wrong. And anything dealing with this case at a deference to Judge Ho, who's now addressing it, I'm going to refer to his actions.
Well, Mr. Mayor, it appears, to me at least, that you are selling New Yorkers out. It appears that you are working with Tom Homan, who is clearly focused on family separation and deportations and harming New Yorkers and others across the country. Now, every other mayor on this panel is pursuing legal and effective policies that benefit our residents and their communities. Their policies actually uphold public safety. Now, I personally agree with the majority of New Yorkers and think, Mr. Mayor, that you should resign. You should do the right thing. You should step down and resign today. And with that, I yield back.
Would my friend yield? Would my friend yield?
I yield.
Yeah. Mr. Mayor, I want to be really clear. Were you pressured in exchange for the dropping and dismissal of criminal charges in your indictment to cooperate with the Trump administration on all fronts with respect to immigration? Did any such conversation take place?
I think I was extremely clear.
I cannot hear you, sir.
I think I was extremely clear. No quid pro quo, no agreement. I did nothing wrong but serve the people of New York City.
Thank my friend for yielding.
Chair, now recognize Mr. Cloud from Texas.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, witnesses, for being here. You know, we are indeed a nation of immigrants. I have to look no further than my own children, who are the inheritance of both my ancestors who got here in the 1600s with William Penn, or my wife who got here when we got married. I think that's really what this nation is about. But you are not here today because of legal immigration. You are here because of illegal migrants who have been sent to our country. In your opening statements, there was a deft linguistic shell game that you played to try to conflate legal immigration with people who are coming here illegally. And we're savvy to that. You are here because each of you, with the exception of Mr. Adams, have said in some form or fashion that you will not honor ICE detainers. In other words, that when you have people in custody and ICE says we need to come arrest that person because they're here illegally, that we will not honor that. That's why you're here. No one's asking you to go round up criminal aliens. We are asking you to take people who are already in your custody and hand them over to legal federal law enforcement. Now, what this does is it saves U.S. taxpayer money. It keeps from a greater presence of ICE and federal law enforcement in your communities, because if you're releasing them, it takes more people, as Chairman Jordan mentioned, to go in and to re-arrest that person, and it puts the lives of law enforcement in danger. This used to be a bipartisan issue. As a matter of fact, groups like the Cato Institute called President Obama the deporter-in-chief. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to submit for the record a Cato article that said President Obama, deporter-in-chief, is the title of it. So why, we have to ask, is suddenly the left not embracing policies that Obama supported? We can look to last night, where it seems to be Trump derangement syndrome, where the left could not seem to applaud kids fighting cancer, a first lady, an accomplished immigrant in her own rights, where traditionally we have applauded and recognized and honored the families for their sacrifice. Many of them are, this is the president's issue, and they're kind of along for the ride. It was odd, I thought, that they applauded sending more money to the Ukraine, but not peace for Ukraine. And so it brings us back to why we're here and why this is a partisan issue all of a sudden. It boggles the mind. Now, Mayor Johnson, you seem to want to talk about Texas. So I'm from Texas. Let's talk about Texas. First of all, have you been to the southern border?
I've been to Texas, but I have not been exactly to the southern border.
Okay. You seem to talk about Governor Abbott and sending buses to your city. Now, I can understand the concern with that, but I will also let you know that Texas did not ask for the Biden administration to open the borders and send an exponential amount of people that have affected your city into our state. And you should know that no one forced them to go to your city. The reason they selected your city is because you have said it's a sanctuary city. Everyone was asked where they wanted to go before they got on the bus. No one asked them to get on the, or told them, forced them to get on the bus. They did it of their own free will, and they were sent to your city because of your stated claim to be a sanctuary city. Now, one thing I could tell you, having toured the facilities, is that I've been to those facilities under the Biden administration where there was a map on the wall, and you could see the migrants kind of pointing out which city they wanted to go to. And I can also tell you, from having been through the immigration process with my wife, there's a difference between people coming here legally and then people who are, when I've been at the ceremony where the people are crying with tears as they take the oath of citizenship to come to this country, is far different than people coming across our border, waving the flags, not trying to assimilate into the United States culture, and sometimes bringing crime into our communities. This is an issue. Now, each mayor, I want to ask you, one of the issues recently is how much FEMA dollars have gone to support migrants and hotel rooms in your communities. Mayor Adams, do you know how many FEMA dollars have spent in your city?
$80 million, and I've been to the border, and I saw those maps pointing to New York.
Thank you. Mayor Johnston?
Thank you, Congressman. I know we do have some federal dollars that I have to get back to in the exact amount.
It's roughly $32 million, $38 million. Mayor Johnston?
I don't have the exact numbers.
It's $32
million. I don't have the number. I'd love to know.
$29 million. So, understandably, citizens are concerned about that their taxpayer dollars that are supposed to be going to disaster relief for them and their communities going to illegal aliens. Do you agree, each of you, yes or no question? I have a couple seconds. Do you recognize that it is against the law to harbor criminal aliens?
Gentlemen, time's expired, but please answer the question, Mayor Adams.
Yes, reading federal law, correct.
I do recognize that, and we do not do that.
The city of Chicago does not harbor criminals.
Yes, we follow the laws.
Mr. Chairman, I have a unanimous consent request.
Proceed.
I would ask to enter into the record two articles. One, talking about President Trump putting mass deportations to the heart of his campaign during the campaign. And just last night, Trump vows to use U.S. military for mass deportations.
Without objection, so ordered.
Thank the chair.
Chair recognized Mr. Frost from Florida.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the year is 1969. My abuela, Zenaida, my grandma, Yaya, gets a call. And her, my mother, Maritza, my aunt, Sandra, and my grandpa, Pepe, have to go to a plane within 24 hours because they've been approved to come to the United States. They came here as refugees in 1969 during the freedom flights from Cuba for their new life in accordance with the promise of this nation. ICE arrested hundreds of U.S. citizens during Trump's first term. Again, in the last few weeks, ICE has detained Native Americans, a teenage girl from Nicaragua, Puerto Ricans, a Puerto Rican military veteran, all legal residents, but all who fit the description. I bet someone like my grandma would have fit the description too, maybe even myself. Trump's border czar went on TV and raged about Americans studying up on their constitutional rights during interactions with ICE agents. It was one of the most despicable things I've seen. And the question is, why is he so upset that people know their constitutional rights? To the point where this administration has moved to try to intimidate members of Congress for trying to educate their constituents to know their rights. Why don't they want people to know their rights? Well, because if we know what our rights are, we'll also know when Trump tries to take them away. Mr. Beer, why are such outbursts from this administration alarming as threats to our rights and liberties?
Well, you think about what we've heard about detainer requests. I have documented over 155 U.S. citizens who've been targeted by detainer requests. And they want to say, we're going to just take the discretion away from state and local governments over detainer requests, even in the case where someone is clearly a U.S. citizen. Here's my birth certificate. Doesn't matter. They're going to disregard it. And so, yes, I am well aware of the threat this administration poses to constitutional
So from what we've
rights.
Seen the last few weeks, should American citizens, should people with legal permanent residence in this country be also scared of this mass deportation campaign for themselves and their own children?
Oh, absolutely. The birthright citizenship order is the most egregious, but that doesn't stop there. They want to take away people's citizenship and people's rights. Regardless whether they're citizens or
Thank
not.
Thank you. Mayor Wu, Boston has been named the 9th best city for quality of life in the entire country. Congratulations.
I would argue with that.
Okay. If Trump succeeds in forcing you to redirect your city's budget and personnel to help with ICE raids and this mass deportation campaign, how would that affect quality of life for your people?
First, that is against the laws in Boston and in Massachusetts. But I've heard from so many community members, including residents who are immigrants, who are citizens, that they are terrified. And that means when people don't feel comfortable reaching out to call 911 when they need help, when survivors of domestic violence don't feel comfortable reporting or giving information, it makes all of us less safe, even those who aren't immigrants.
This culture of fear is bad for the safety of our people. Donald Trump's immigration raids are also traumatizing and destabilizing, of course, all Americans, but especially children and kids. Being a kid in America is hard enough. Making good grades, going through more school shooter drills and fire drills. And now Trump wants to send armed ICE agents into their classrooms to rip children from the school desk as they're trying to learn. Mayor Johnston, my colleagues are laughing about that. I don't find that funny. What would a school day be like for a kid in your city when ICE suddenly bangs down on the door and abruptly grabs their teacher or one of their friends?
Thank you, sir. I was a teacher and I was a school principal before I did this job. So I knew that our school was often the safest place that kids came. And they knew there they could learn, they could get support, they get access to services. And many of our kids come from mixed status families. They don't know their status. They don't know their mom's status or their dad's status. So I've had families before who have pulled their kids out of school, kids who were citizens, because they were worried that somehow their kids were in danger because they didn't know who was being taken. And so for us, the fastest way to make a city unsafe is to have kids not feel safe in their own schools.
See, they want everybody to live in fear of undocumented people. That is what they want to do. But I'll tell you, when I'm in my district and I do roundtables, I've done them with kids in elementary school, and I ask them what they want us to do, they want us to ban assault weapons. They say what they're actually scared of is being shot to death and dying in their schools. And because of actions that the Democratic administration took, the Biden administration with Congress, gun violence has gone down in Denver, 24%, 25% in Chicago, 40% down homicides in Boston. This works. Gun violence went up 45% under Trump. So when they're in charge, more people die. When they're in charge, we are actually less safe. And I think that's an important thing that we all have to keep in mind as they try to scare us in terms of immigrants who are living in this country. Thank you, and I yield back.
Chair recognizes Mr. Palmer from Alabama.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thank the witnesses for being here. I just want to respond about crimes committed by people here legally. Every crime committed by someone in the United States illegally is a crime that would not have been committed. Lincoln Riley, Ruby Garcia, Rachel Morin, Jocelyn Nungare, the woman set on fire in the New York subway. These are all assaults, rapes, murders, and other crimes that would not have taken the lives of these people if those people were not here illegally. They were given safe harbor. Now, I want to ask you something. You all took an oath of office. Mr. Adams, did you swear to uphold the Constitution of the United States?
Yes, I do.
How about you, Mayor Johnson?
Yes, sir, I did.
How about you, Mayor, the other Mayor Johnson?
Yeah, the Constitution of the United States as well as the Constitution of Illinois.
Okay, and Mayor, yes. You did. Are you familiar with the Supremacy Clause? Any of you?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. Then under the Supremacy Clause, you understand that the laws of the United States take precedent over the laws of Colorado, over the laws of Illinois, over the laws of Massachusetts, and your cities. Do you understand that?
Yes, sir, I do.
But when you declared your cities sanctuary cities, you did so illegally. Do you understand that?
Respectfully, sir, I would disagree with that. We follow
You're disagreeing with
law.
The law. It's against the law to give sanctuary to people who have committed felonies, and it's a felony to cross the border legally.
You gave sanctuary
to people who are here illegally. You violated your oath to uphold the Constitution. Because of the Supremacy Clause, the laws of the United States take preference. But you didn't do that.
There is, thank you, sir. There's no part of our city law that violates federal law. No part of the practices or services we provided.
Did you personally violate the law then by giving sanctuary? Somebody gave these people sanctuary. You declared your city, the Boston city of Boston, was declared a sanctuary city by you, Mayor.
Being a sanctuary city, as you describe it, or being a city as we describe it, that's home for everyone. Does not. It means that if
when
you commit a crime,
safe harbor
we're held accountable
to people who are here illegally,
status.
And when you interfere with the officers of the law who are there to even remove people that you know have committed crimes, you have violated your oath of office. You've committed a crime, Mr. Chairman. I don't understand why we haven't been discussing obstruction of justice. I mean, get real about this.
Sir.
We have a problem in the country with the people who have come here illegally. And I just gave you a few names of people who have been raped and murdered. There are numerous others. There's a whole organization established called Remembrance to remember the people who have been assaulted, raped, murdered in this country, because certain cities, certain officials decided to give sanctuary to people who came here illegally and committed these crimes. It goes all the way back to Kate Steinle, San Francisco, shot by someone who was here illegally. She would still be alive today. She died in the arms of her father. So, I want to know if you understand the Supremacy Clause, that the laws of the United States are supreme over your whatever your opinions might be of what the laws are.
Sir, I do recognize that. We do follow that. I want to clarify that we actively, aggressively pursue any known criminal in the city, and we actually partner with federal government to do that. If there is someone with a criminal warrant, we're searching for them. We have federal task forces we're partners of to break up gang activity. We do that for drug trafficking. We do that on armed robberies. So we are in partnership with the federal government on many issues around...
Mayor Adams is being attacked because he's agreed to cooperate with federal officials to uphold the laws of the United States. I haven't heard any of you in defense of that.
We are absolutely upholding the laws of the United States. We do it every day, and we will continue to do it.
I just think we need to do a deeper dive into this, Mr. Chairman. If it were up to me, I mean, I'd be considering referring charges. I think we've got a problem here when we decide that there's some laws that we will obey and some laws that we won't. I don't care who it is, Republican, Democrat. I don't care what office you hold. We need to abide by the laws passed by.
Will the gentleman yield?
No, I will not yield. Mr. Chairman, I thank you for the time. I yield back.
Gentleman yields back. We're gonna have two more questioners. Then we're gonna have to take a break at the request of the witnesses. A 15-minute break, maybe 20 if we need that. But chair recognizes Mr. Kassar, and after him, then Mr. Higgins, and we'll proceed with the break. But chair recognizes Mr. Kassar.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mayor Wu, can you tell us a little bit, just maybe 20 seconds, about how your administration has helped address unemployment, especially amongst youth in your city, which we know is a risk when we have high levels of young people unemployed?
We made a commitment, our mayor's guarantee, that any young person in the Boston Public Schools who wanted a paid summer job would get one, and we fulfilled that with the partnership of businesses and companies and organizations throughout the city. Record numbers participating.
Thank you, Mayor Wu. Mayor Johnson, can you tell us a little bit about measures your office have implemented to address the root causes of violence in Chicago?
Thank you for that question. Yes, so first of all, it's great to report that violence is down in the city of Chicago, and it has gone down since I've been in office as a result of a couple of measures. One, we've reopened 3 mental health clinics because we do know that mental health issues, and we are in a very severe mental health crisis. We've also increased the number of youth employment. We have hired almost 28,000 young people for last summer. This year, we have an opportunity to hire up to 29,000 young people. We've also built more homes. Just last year, we've appropriated $11 billion, 37,000 construction jobs in the works for almost 10,000 more affordable units, and we have promoted and hired 200 detectives to increase trust between community and law enforcement to solve the crimes that do occur in our city.
Thank you so much. Mayors, I want to thank you for the hard work you're doing every single day. Just in 40 seconds, you have described building tens of thousands of homes for people that need them, hiring detectives to solve cold cases, building community trust to reduce violence, hiring people to do incredible mental health work and reducing the youth unemployment rate. That is so much more than what the Republican majority can ever describe having ideas about. And that's why they've dragged you before us today. They want to point the finger at you because they have no plan on how to address housing, no plan on how to reduce costs, no plan on how to actually reduce violence in our communities. In fact, maybe some of the only plans they have would be to make those issues worse. And I know that you all, as mayors, are doing one of the hardest jobs in this country every single day. You're serving your communities honorably. And they don't want the American people to hear about how Boston has drastically dropped your unemployment rate. They don't want to hear, they don't want the American people to hear about how Chicago is dropping the rate of violence in the city. But our job is to make sure the American people actually hear the truth. And the truth is that you are pairing a law enforcement response along with a mental health response and a housing response and a jobs response to what's going on in your cities. And that is so critical. Republicans, on the other hand, here are going back to the same old tactic, which is to say, find a vulnerable group of people and let's blame them for everything that we can. Anything bad that happens, let's go try to point the finger at our political opponents or at a vulnerable person or at a person of color from a faraway place. And that doesn't actually solve real issues for the American people. Republicans and their big boss donors blame immigrants for low wages because they don't want the American people to see the Republican plan to dismantle the NLRB, to dismantle unions, and to never pass a bill raising wages for American workers. They blame immigrants for housing costs because the Republicans are dismantling the Department of Housing and Urban Development and stripping affordable housing funding from this country. They want to distract from the $8 million a day that people like Elon Musk get in federal contracts while they attack hardworking immigrants and while they attack officials that are actually just trying to do their jobs. Mayor Johnson, you have a limited number, I suppose, of jail cells in Cook County and a limited number of law enforcement resources. Is that correct?
That is correct, and I do not have jurisdiction over Cook County jails.
And you want to make sure that when somebody in the city of Chicago calls 911, that they get an appropriate response. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And so what I have been hearing all morning from my Republican colleagues is they want the federal government to go tell the city of Denver or the city of Boston or the city of Chicago. No, they want the federal government to be able to call you and take over your police resources or take over your county's jail resources, and you don't even represent the county, for whatever case they might come up with, the person is dangerous or not, instead of having cities determine if somebody is dangerous and needs to be held, instead of having cities say, we want to make sure if you have an emergency that we get somebody to you and don't just send out our police to a call that may not be a priority just because somebody in the federal government wants to go after somebody with no criminal background and that isn't a threat. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, right before I yield back, I just want to thank people that are involved in local government, city council members, neighborhood associations, mayors, the people who keep our cities running. You deserve our support in making your cities more safe. You deserve our support.
Gentlemen, time's expired. Chair recognizes Mr. Higgins from Louisiana.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's clarify for America. Mayor Adams, Mayor Johnson, Mayor Johnson, and Mayor Wu, are you here today under the advice of counsel, and do you have counsel present? Yes or no?
I want to understand the question.
Are you here today under the advice of counsel, and do you have counsel present?
Do have counsel present. I'm here because we were requested to appear.
Did you have counsel prior to your appearance?
Yes, we did.
Thank you. This is not a trap question. We just want to clarify.
Okay.
Here under the advice of counsel, do you have counsel present?
Yes, sir.
Counsel present here because I was invited.
Did you counsel before your trip here?
We do have counsel.
Did you get advice from your counsel?
Yes.
Okay, then you're under the advice of counsel.
Yes.
Mayor Wu, thank you. To just clarify for America, these mayors are all sanctuary city mayors. But the narrative is no longer comfortable because 3 months ago we were at the tail end of 4 years of millions and millions of illegals coming into our country. It was out of control. The only thing that has happened since then, we had an election in November, and now we're not pulling the curtain back. We have ripped the curtain from the rods. We have revealed to America just how fast we could have secured our border if you had an executive that was willing to enforce the law. So now we're paying attention to our municipalities, and every one of them is lawyered up. They've changed their narrative. We got example after example. The mayor of Chicago, we must lead with and live by the promise of sanctuary city. The mayor of Denver, willing to go to jail in defense of sanctuary city policy. The list goes on. But the policies of these mayors and our previous president have consequences, real life consequences. I have a family here today, Mr. Chairman, who lost their beautiful loved one. This young man was killed by an illegal immigrant in Texas that never should have been in our country. He'll never be here to raise his daughter, Anne Marie, to love and cherish and honor and uphold his beautiful wife, Olivia. And you mayors, you have responsibility, not just to your communities and the citizens you just want to serve, but by extension to the entire republic. And let me clarify, I was a cop for a long time. To honor the jurisdictional authority of another law enforcement agency, you do it every day in your city, guaranteed every one of you, if you have an inmate in your city on city charges and that inmate has a felony warrant from a neighboring county or another county in your state, and that county contacts your city while you have that inmate in detention, you and ask you to hold them for them to come pick it up at, upon release, guaranteed you release that inmate to your to the county over or to your state police. But you're not doing it for ICE. And ICE is responsible to remove millions of criminal, hard-edged, criminal illegals from our country. And we've had enough. America's fed up with this betrayal of oath, and you'll be held accountable. One of you said you're willing to go to jail. We might give you that opportunity, good mayor. One of my colleagues mentioned the children. I always want to talk to the children, separation of children. You, and on, at any given time in America, there are 750 to 850,000 American citizen parents of minor children incarcerated in our country. If you commit a felony in America, you get arrested and prosecuted and convicted and incarcerated, you can expect to be separated from your children. But let me say, there's a sunset to that separation. Because when you do your time, you'll be released. You can return to your family. This young man will never return to his family. And he should have never been removed from his family. If we had a president and heads of our municipalities that were willing to uphold the federal law that exists, America is moving into a new era of enforcement of our own laws. Welcome to it. Mr. Chairman, I yield.
Very good.
Mr. Chair, I have unanimous consent.
All right.
This is an article from Wired. It is February 18th of 2025. U.S. funding cuts are helping criminals get away with child abuse and human trafficking. Services supporting victims of online child exploitation.
Without objection, so ordered.
Thank you so much.
At the request of the witnesses, the committee will take a 20-minute break. Pursuant to the previous order, the chair declares the committee in recess for 20 minutes.